What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that dazzles like the Northern Lights. Today, Robinson squashed by Oxford. Warnock gets a hangover from the claret. There's no immediate marginal gains worth for QPR. And goals galore in League One. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. We are back in our regular slot recording on a Monday, looking back at all the big stories from the Football League this past weekend. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined today by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. Hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello, Matt.
We got loads of stuff coming up today. Of course, there's managerial movements to talk about. There was a goal fest in League One as well, a big win in League Two for On Fire Carlisle, and a team of the week as well. First of all, though, how about this from our friends at Quinbet, who have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, let's get into some news. Another week, another P45 issued to an EFL boss. This time it's Carl Robinson, who's been given his walking papers after his Oxford side took just 1 point from his final 8 games in charge. He was appointed in March 2018, took them into the playoffs in successive seasons, losing the final to Wickham in 2020. Adrian, this is one that feels like it's been coming for a while. And the temptation is to say, well, why didn't he jump before he was pushed? But of course, the answer to that, I'm guessing, is because he would have forfeited the money that Oxford are going to pay him for letting him go.
Yeah, it feels like they've had a relatively unhappy marriage for a while. Myself and Sam have both said, I think last summer, that it might have been the best time to go, just because he didn't seem very happy with the budgets and with the players that he could recruit. Contract renewals kept on being an issue, so they didn't have the funds to keep their better players, and he was becoming increasingly agitated. They've lost 7 of their last 8, so I don't think Carl Robinson can have too many complaints. Why do they keep losing? It's goals. The goals have dried up massively. Oxford were always, under Carl Robinson, exciting, attack-minded. It was almost as if they were too attack-minded at times. But that's just ended. I think they've scored 3 goals across their last 8 matches, which tells a story. So, yeah, that's why they keep losing. They're just not scoring enough goals. Home form's poor, which means the fans are very much on the player and the manager's backs. So, yeah, I think a change has been coming for quite some time.
He'll get another job in League One, won't he, Sam? Carl Robinson, his body of work is strong enough to keep him at this level, you'd think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He'd probably be in similar to Michael Appleton, who we might come on to, but, you know, he gets linked to championship jobs and gets championship jobs. So, yeah, I'd put Carl Robinson in the same bracket as that. And I wouldn't have imagined he would have contemplated leaving, you know, after a playoff defeat a few years ago as it was. But after that semi-final defeat to Blackpool, possibly, and definitely, as Clarkie says, last season, having not made the playoffs, I would have felt it was a good chance for him to move on and get a new opportunity somewhere else. So, yeah, not been good. Everything that we've known about Oxford over his tenure, yeah, free scoring, clear identity, that has not been evident at all in recent weeks. I think he changed the captain at the weekend. There's been different shapes, you know, different personnel. 2 centre-halves hadn't played together for a while. And I think when you lose 3-0 at home to a struggling side, or a side that have been struggling, yeah, there's no surprise. And we heard the comments, or I read the comments from the chief exec going into the weekend. So I think this decision was probably going to be made irrelevant of, you know, them picking up a point or something at the weekend. It was definitely going to come to an end.
All the usual candidates in the frame, Clarkie, as I had a look this morning at the early front runners: Michael Appleton, Grant McCann, Danny Cowley, Liam Manning. I guess John Messino would have been one of those a month or so ago. Is there anybody from that list who stands out to you?
Yeah, I can't see, but yeah, Messino dumping Pompey. It's all going okay there, isn't it? Bloomfield style and coming back to his spiritual home. I think Appleton, maybe, because I know that he's been there before. He's regarded pretty fondly. Could be a good place for him to land again. Maybe the Cowleys as well at Oxford, just to bring a fresh energy to the place. He'll be missed, won't he? He's a big personality, Carl Robinson. So I think they need somebody quite charismatic, actually, to fill his boots. It's a big old void that I think will be at the club, at the training ground in the coming days. So, yeah, I think someone that can bring a fresh energy but also personality would be welcome.
They are away at Lincoln on Saturday, which will be particularly interesting if either Cowley or Appleton are appointed in the meantime. Hartlepool, we mentioned that they got rid of Keith Curl last week. They replaced him with John Askey, and he helped them fight back to draw 3-3 with Walsall in his first game in charge. Interesting quote here from the chairman, Sam. Raj Singh said, "We had to move very quickly to find out who was available and ready to come immediately, given the challenge ahead," which to me is not exactly a ringing endorsement. But he was very popular with the supporters at York, wasn't he, Askey? And I guess getting a decent result in your first game always helped.
Yeah, well, I think, didn't we first come across him or on our show when he was at Macclesfield?
He got promoted, didn't he?
And then that didn't end particularly well, did it? So, yeah, I was quite interested to see that he was who they plump for. But yeah, great way to start. And Dan Kemp continues to be their shining light, doesn't he, since he joined from MK Dons, a couple of penalties and also assisting late on. Well, it was his delivery for the Connor Jennings equaliser. So that should give them a real good feeling around the place, and we'll see if they can build from there. But it's essentially a new squad, so a lot of those players will be, you know, new 11 as well. The team will be bedding in a little bit after a lot of activity in January, so it may take a few more weeks, but we'll see if they can have an upturn.
Yeah, he's known as being a really attacking manager, John Askey. He's a 4-3-3 guy, quick wide players, play it on the deck, you know, look to attack at every opportunity. I think that's why York fans loved him. Obviously, he brought a little bit of success there. Ultimately, he ended up getting fired, but I think he's regarded fondly. Didn't work out brilliantly at Shrewsbury or Port Vale, but Macclesfield, he did a great job in getting them out of the National League into the EFL. So, yeah, I think Hartlepool fans will like him, and he's the kind of person that will try and sort of build that connection between the supporters and the team. And he does that through what he says and also through entertaining football. So I think Hartlepool fans, providing they get the right results, might enjoy the latter stages of this season.
Now, also in League Two, Ross Embleton, who we had on the Totally Football League show plenty of times last season, lovely fella he is the interim manager at Colchester United. He's the head of recruitment. Now, you wondered, Clarkey, whether he was going to appoint himself as successor, Kenny Dalglish style, at Liverpool a few years ago. But he said, Ross, after the defeat against Northampton, everybody agrees that the sooner the new person can be in, the better for everybody in preparation for next week's game at Bradford, which would suggest to me that maybe it's not going to be him. And also, he maybe thinks the job of head of recruitment is a little more stable than the job of first team manager.
Yeah, head of recruitment. I mean, you'd have thought head of recruitment was in charge of recruiting the manager. So he's basically going to sack himself with someone of his choice, isn't he? Sooner or later. So, but no, we love Ross. He's a good guy, knows his football as well. And in terms of the recruitment in January, so I know Sam agrees that they did a great job, didn't they, at Colchester? I think they identified some excellent players. So, but yeah, head of recruitment, like you say, is a more stable job than first team manager at that club. I did notice, boys, that it's Ben Garner that's the heavy favourite for this gig. He seems to jump from one job to the next, doesn't he? Philosophy coach. We'll see.
Would he be your choice, Sam, Ben Garner?
The pause.
I'm not sure he'd go for that, having just recently been the Charlton manager. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that would be something that he'd go for right now. I just looking. I mean, their next three games are away at Bradford, home to Stockport, away at Leighton Orient. Maybe that's why Ross doesn't want to take the next few games. That is hell of a baptism of fire, and they're not in as desperate state as Oxford, where matters are so pressing there because they're 5 points away from the drop zone and they cannot buy a win. As Clarkey said, I think it's 7 defeats in 8. So Oxford need to act fast, get someone in. Otherwise, you just keep a caretaker and interim, whatever staff you've got there in charge until the summer, maybe. It's a little bit more comfortable at Colchester. 9 points is the gap. But that said, with those three games coming up, I'm expecting the majority of the teams, maybe Rochdale apart, to improve and make a fist of it at the bottom of League Two. So, yeah, they need to act as well and get someone in on a permanent basis just to make sure that it doesn't turn into a relegation battle. But, yeah, I think they've got good enough players to survive, and I don't expect that 9-point gap to be cut anytime soon.
Meanwhile, in League One, how's this for a good news story, which you don't often get? Exeter City's Kevin McDonald scoring his first goal in 5 years, his first since he had a kidney transplant from his brother, and 8 days after the birth of his daughter. It makes me feel a bit lazy, Clarky. So he's probably pretty tired, Kevin.
Oh, definitely. And it was a great goal as well. It's a fantastic story. To give the background, he was diagnosed with kidney disease when he was 18, and then he's just managed it throughout his football career, of which he was pretty successful. Had some good times at Fulham, didn't he? He played at Burnley, I think, a number of decent clubs. But then it deteriorated quite badly. And it was basically down to one working kidney that was down to, you know, 10% at one point. It was a really dangerous situation. He gets the transplant off his brother, which is a brilliant gesture. And it took 10 days for it to actually work. They were saying that it was rejecting the organ, and that there was a very real possibility that he might have to have a second kidney transplant. So to come back from that kind of position in life and to be a professional footballer still, let alone score a goal like he did at the weekend, is just a triumph for him and his family, isn't it? It's a wonderful story. And yeah, just hope he can stay fit now and contribute even more.
All right. So we're very pleased for him. But Adrian, you've got beef with Carlos Mendes Gomez. Is it him or is it the Morecambe fans that you're spoiling with there? Because I'm just wondering if you're trying to set up a celebrity boxing bout between you and Tyson Fury or something by angering Morecambe.
Now, Morecambe fans, what are you doing? Take a good look in the mirror, Morecambe fans, and ask yourself why you're clapping a goal from former player Carlos Mendes Gomez, a goal that turns out to be the winner in a very important match at Fleetwood in the Fish Derby. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. He scores a goal. Okay, he's a Morecambe legend, Carlos Mendes Gomez, but you can't stand there and applaud a goal against your team. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? Mendes Gomez didn't do anything. He just scored a goal.
No,
I
think the fans were reacting to Mendes Gomez's lack of celebration. He kind of, I think he kind of raised the hands, or he walked off kind of solemnly, and I think the fans reacted to that. Rather than it being, you know, this guy's a legend, we're going to give him a clap.
It was respectful applause for showing respect. So
there you go.
We're through the looking glass.
Yeah. I digressed, but yeah, we got there in the end. Yeah,
it's all sorts of wrong. Hang your heads in shame, Morecambe fans. Poor.
Something fishy going on. Right, that was the news. Next, we'll look back on some of the weekend standout game. Well, Huddersfield and Neil Warnock were injected with a major dose of reality at Turf Moor on Saturday. His Terriers getting thumped 4-0 by Premier League bound Burnley. Adrian Warnock says they're the best side, Burnley, he's seen in 25 years in the Championship, which is a good way to excuse a defeat, but you might not be far wrong, might you? I mean, 76% possession, 22 shots at goal, total domination. Are they going to even need much surgery to the squad to be above the dotted line in the Premier League next year?
If Burnley were in the Premier League at the moment, I think they'd be in mid-table. They certainly wouldn't be near the relegation zone. That's how good they are. I don't think Neil Warnock is wrong. I think they might just be the best Championship side we've seen for a quarter of the century. They're certainly the most sophisticated in terms of their tactical approach. It's incredible. The pass and move football, the rotational movement of the players. You've got these inverted fullbacks and they did a lot of damage in this game. Connor Roberts with the pass of the game inside the fullback from a central midfield position. Yes, it's Connor Roberts that's been running up and down the wing in recent years, you know, taking throw-ins and keeping things neat and tidy, putting the odd cross in. He's now playing like a cultured central midfielder. It's remarkable what Burnley are producing. And this was an absolute trouncing. Josh Cullen, just the 114 passes in the game. Yeah, they've got quality all over the pitch. And it's the 14th time that Burnley have scored at least 3 goals in a match this season. There are a lot of clubs out there that, you know, they've struggled to do that 5 times in a season. They're already on 14. It's, they're a wonderful team and they're going to be up by Easter.
Yeah, it's certainly looking like they're strolling their way through this division. Sam, bit of a twist here for you. It's not a tweet of the week, but this quote from Vincent Kompany, I thought, was a nice spin on the theme of enjoy your weekend, Clarets. He said, we're sending 20,000 fans home happy and allowing people in Burnley to have a good Sunday.
Very nice.
No,
very nice, Vincent.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah, fine. Yeah.
Allowing people to have a good Sunday. I'm not sure I'm totally on board with that. They can have a good Sunday.
Shots on target, by the way, 12-1 in the game. So I don't think Colin can have any complaints about the loss here. And he was bang on. I loved his assessment, actually, Neil Warnock. He just said, look, they're on a different level. We ain't got to worry about that. It's what we do from here on in. And that's sensible management. No point burying your players when you get beat by a team as good as Burnley.
Yeah, he's seen it all before, hasn't he? Well, Sheffield United, of course, one of Neil Warnock's old clubs, as most of them are. They needed a win and they got one against Watford. And that was doubly beneficial for them because Middlesbrough lost at West Brom. It means there's a 7-point gap between the Blades in second and third placed Borough. Let's give the love, though, Sam, to West Brom because they are 5 points off the playoffs after a first win in four attempts. And this one was pretty much done and dusted after 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I thought it was telling, really, that the trio of players involved in the all-important goals, John Swift, Jed Wallace and the goal scorer DK. And it got me thinking that I don't feel like I've seen those three performing often enough, really. And you had to go back six games to the defeat at Burnley. If you remember, late defeat at Burnley. So they did pretty well. They were 1-1 until Scott Twine scored that brilliant free kick. And I think having John Swift in the hole, having Jed Wallace wide with the focal point of DK down the middle is the formula that we were all anticipating and could be the winning one for Corbrand moving forward. So two excellently crafted goals. Wallace actually played wide right, but he darted to the left-hand side to supply the delivery for the first, I think it was. And John Swift just supplying lovely weighted balls from his position in the hole. So yeah, they raced into a lead and joint best record when scoring first at home. They've won eight and drawn the other one. So it didn't look in much doubt. Only one real attempt for Middlesbrough to talk of. Wonderful save from Griffiths from Isaiah Jones late on in this game. And only the second time that Middlesbrough failed to score under Carrick. So it just didn't click for them offensively. But West Brom, having raced into the two-goal lead, they just managed the game in the second half. Defensively, we know how strong they've been, especially at the Hawthorns. And also got me thinking about a new bit of terminology. It's not a blip or a wobble for Middlesbrough. This is solely a hiccup.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's bang on, isn't it? Perfect to me. Yeah, absolutely. 70% possession they had in this game. And Daryl DK might not know the difference between washing powder and dishwasher tablets, but he sure can finish.
By the way, on the goalkeeper, Griffiths, good management. Recalling him from his loan, I flagged it on the show before about Button. I just didn't think he was quite up to it. He was costing the team goals. And you've got to make tough decisions sometimes. You've got to be a little bit cruel sometimes to be kind to everybody else. And I think
you've got to push the button.
Yeah, you've got to push. That's exactly what you've got to do. You've got to push the button.
But did not have Alex Palmer in goal for a period, and he was recalled as well, was he not?
I can't remember the scenario, but Palmer was obviously, he's obviously injured for a while. He was their number one.
Yeah.
And he's out. And Button, it's just not at the same level, I'm afraid. But Griffith's got his opportunity, keeps a clean sheet. As you said, some good saves in there. So, yeah, good management.
Yeah, and he's a West Brom boy, isn't he? He's been there since he was 10. He's done his time on loan at Cheltenham, Lincoln, Portsmouth, and now he wants to be West Brom's number one. I thought there's some brilliant insight from Carlos Corbrand after this game. He said, goals are key to win football matches. And there's absolutely no debate about that. He is 100% right. Now, QPR were hoping for a new manager bounce when Blackburn visited Loftus Road for Gareth Ainsworth's first game at the helm. It very much did not happen. They lost 3-1. Clobber watch. Possibly a new jacket, definitely the same shirt from Gareth, I think. Who do you want to talk about, Adrian? Do you want to talk about Sam Gallagher taking a bit of the burden off, given that Brereton Diaz's goals have dried up? Or do you want to talk about QPR's ropey defence?
Let's go for a bit of both. Let me start with some news that Gareth Ainsworth might reassure him, might make him feel a little bit better about himself today. New manager bounces don't happen for QPR. I don't know if Sam would be very well aware of this. Critchley won one of his first 11 games. Mick Beale won one of his first six games. Mark Warburton won two of his first seven. McLaren lost his first four games, conceding 13 goals. Holloway won one, then lost six in a row. Hasselbank didn't win until his ninth game. Chris Ramsey, two from 12. Redknapp, one from seven. Mark Hughes, two from 10. It doesn't happen. At the loft, it just doesn't. So just got to ride through this rough patch and then maybe things will turn out okay.
A Blackburn any good? Did we work that out yet?
Two of the assists of the season in the game. That's the difference. I think the QPR worked hard. You saw with their goal, they got bodies into the box. That's going to be a key thing, I think, for Gareth Ainsworth. When the ball goes wide, get bodies in the box, feed off those second balls. That's how they scored their goal. There were little positives there for Queen's Park Rangers, but ultimately they're undone by two genius assists. No doubt about it. The one from Lewis Travis was just sensational. The way he shifts the ball and slides it, you know, through the eye of a needle, the angle he found was unbelievable for Sammy Smodic. And then out wide, you can look at Dazelle and Powell and say that's really rank defending, but the skill of Rankin Costello to keep the ball glued to his foot and to beat them was brilliant and laid it on a plate for Sam Gallagher. You will not see two better assists in the same game, I don't think, all season across the EFL. And that's why QPR lost this game. They don't need to beat themselves up too much, I don't think.
Big concern for me, though, is they're banging trouble as it is, and now they're going to have no Chair, no Willock, no Dykes imminently. I mean, that is huge. Great for Irabunan to get a goal because he's capable of that. He's been, I think, a good loan signing, bar the assist and the goals, but you've got your three biggest goal threats that could be missing for the majority of the rest of the season. I don't know how Ilias Chair is obviously today or what the outcome is of him having to go off so early, but yeah.
Do you think they could go down?
I think they could go down to the last few games. Yeah, I think it could go down to the last few games. I just can't see where they're going to turn this around at the moment with their two, clearly their two best players missing, and he divides opinion like no other Lyndon Dykes, but he'd be in the team right now and he'd be the best bet at getting a goal. So difficult, really difficult to see where the next win's coming from.
Yeah, life comes at you fast for Gareth Ainsworth. Last week he was Chair, boys. Now he's no Chair, boys. Sam, you've enjoyed digging me out about Forest getting beaten in front of your very eyes on Saturday. How do you like these apples? Courtesy of Jack Supple on Twitter. Since consecutive clean sheets versus Preston and Cardiff, QPR have failed to keep a clean sheet in each of the last 11 games in all competitions, conceding 24 goals. And QPR have conceded 3+ goals in 3 consecutive games for the first time since April 1994. I guess the positivity there is that Gareth Ainsworth knows how to organise a defence.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that as his strongest characteristic.
Okay, so there's no positivity then. You're going
to I don't know. They've got good players. You know, they've got good players. They've got good players to come back as well. You know, off the treatment table. So it's not all lost, but yeah, it was a disappointing way to start. I think the performance wasn't too bad. I think there was a little bit of an upturn in terms of the effort levels and what have you. Clarkie makes a good point, you know, loading the box, etc. You're going to get that. Needs to try and reinvigorate the two fullbacks. I know that Kai played the right back role at the weekend. Led was absent, but him and Pahl have been brilliant. So listen, there was the makings of a good side. There's some good players in that squad. But, you know, we're out there talismanic forwards. It's difficult to know exactly where the goals are going to come from. So he's going to have to work wonders on the training ground to turn things around.
Well, let's go into League One, as QPR might be saying next season then. Peterborough 5, Plymouth 2, a proper thumping for high-flying Plymouth here in the week that they booked their place at Wembley. But Stephen Schumacher, Sam, has got this in perspective. He's pointing out that, you know, his players have had 5 games in 14 days. Says he won't overreact, but you know something's wrong when a manager makes 2 subs in the first half.
Yeah, you know, obviously 2-0 down at that point. They got back to within a goal of Peterborough on a couple of occasions, but it ended up being a bit of a spanking, didn't it? He'd already gone to 4-4-2, which we don't see Plymouth doing, but can't recall them doing that too often at all this season. So he felt he would get better balance by making the changes as for Butcher in the midfield and in the centre of midfield. And Danny Mayer obviously plays wide left by trade, really. He's comfortable out there for Callum Wright. So he felt that would make them a better balanced outfit. It didn't happen, really, did it? I think we praised the goalkeeper last week. I think he's at fault maybe for 2 or 3 of the goals. Had their number one available, whose name keeps escaping me. What's his name, Clarkie, again? Michael Cooper, thank you. If they had him available, they possibly don't lose this game, or it's a tighter affair. They're missing Dan Scar as well, who I think is fundamental to their defensive stability. Adam Randall in the middle of the pitch as well. So, yeah, a little bit hindered by by injuries. But yeah, huge credit to Peterborough, whose Achilles heel this season has been winning against teams in the top half. 15 games, just 3 wins, 12 defeats. That's why they are where they are. But this was a return to the old entertainers era of some brilliant front players they've had previously, and Ephraim Mason-Clark and Poku are, you know, great suppliers for Johnson Clark Harris, really electric wire players. And Ephraim Mason-Clark was involved in 4 of the 5 goals here. And yeah, a really good victory for them. Probably the most impressive of the season and thoroughly deserved, really. Thought Jack Taylor joining in from midfield as well gave them a huge threat. And yeah, Plymouth really struggled to negate the strengths of Peterborough here.
Yeah, 5 wins in 7 for Darren Ferguson now. They are 7 points off the playoffs with a game in hand. All's well at Oakwell after Barnsley beat Derby 4-1 on Saturday, a win that lifts the Tykes above the Rams and into the League One playoff places. Michael Duff, Adrian, talking about the importance of the connection with the supporters, and that's borne out by the fact that they've won 8 of their last 9 at home in all comps.
Yeah, they're loving it at Oakwell. I'm going to be there, actually, in a few weeks for the game against Sheffield Wednesday, which suddenly has the look of a really big Yorkshire derby. Biggest crowd for 3 years at Oakwell, which is decent, obviously, for some of that period. There were no crowds at all in there, but it's still a good achievement. They'd knocked down the prices, I think, and everyone turned out in force, and they enjoyed the game. And I think the front two, Devante Cole, who got a couple, and Norwood were just a proper handful. I like Barnsley. I like the way that they play the game, especially through the wing-backs. Really, really important players. And yeah, they're absolutely flying. They've won 12 of their last 16 matches, Barnsley, which is absolutely promotion form, isn't it? Automatic promotion form. And I don't think they've completely written off the prospect of achieving that. It's just a good energy about the team. I was thinking about doing a scouting report on Jordan Williams, so I'll do a mini one now. He kind of typifies what's going on there, really, at Jordan Williams. He's been there a while. He played in the Championship, played right back, left back. He's played in midfield. Up until this season, he'd not scored a single goal for Barnsley, and he'd made 1 assist. This season, he's got 5 goals and 5 assists, and I've been through those goals, and there's been some absolute beauties in amongst them. You know, long ranges, volleys, just really, really good strikes from the right wing back, Jordan Williams, and his assists have been pretty tidy as well. So he's having the time of his life under Michael Duff, and I think a few of his teammates are as well. So yeah, this was a convincing win. I think Derby obviously got a lot of big hitters, a lot of older players. I think their starting 11 had over 1,500 Championship appearances between them. You can say that about Barnsley, the sort of young, hungry players that are responding really well to their coach. So yeah, this is the kind of win that's going to really help Barnsley during the running. I wouldn't write them off completely of stealing second. I don't think they will, but they'll certainly be in the playoffs.
1 win in 4 for Derby then, Sam. Is that hiccup, blip or wobble?
1 win in 4? Is it 3 defeats?
No, 2 defeats, but a draw at home to Lincoln.
It's a blip.
Okay, I think we'll go with that. Long may it continue.
Close to being a wobble, but it's a blip.
Fingers crossed. Another team who scored 4 goals at home on Saturday were Portsmouth. They beat Cheltenham, 12 points off the playoffs with a game in hand at Pompey. John Massinio says it's a big ask for his team to make it. But a classic example here, Sam, of a bunch of players who maybe fell out of favour with previous manager, you get brought back in by a new manager and reward. Tunnicliffe, Jacobs, Curtis, all in that bracket, all scored here.
Yeah, it seems that way. And yeah, good pedigree players as well. It wasn't too long ago, I think Jacobs was on the cusp of moving to Ipswich, wasn't he? So still, yeah, quality operator playing as a 10 here. Ronan Curtis, we know, has been brilliant, you know, in the division for Portsmouth in previous seasons. He's just lost his way. So having a new manager come in and showing faith in him has obviously got the most out of him in the last few games. They raced into the 3-goal lead. Some real quality goals here, actually, probably emphasising the type of football that Massinio wants to play. 7 shots to none in the first half, 77% of the ball. I mean, this was a desperate performance from Cheltenham and Pompey. had the ability to just ease off in the second half after what they'd done to them in the first period. So, yeah, really good start to life as manager for John Mousinho. I know John Harley, my mate's been really impressed with what he's done in his short spell so far at Fratton Park, and looks like potentially a top manager. Colby Bishop, the one negative, he's just missing chances at the moment. He missed a gilt edge one to win at Lincoln the other day and passed up a couple of opportunities here, although did make a couple.
Nice assists, I thought they were as well. Yeah. One lovely, lovely one. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player. I think nearly as good as you can get at that level in terms of the skill set that he's got. So I'm sure he'll come again. But yeah, it's a great win for them, but very concerning Cheltenham. You know, one win in 10. They've only scored in one of their last six games. That was in their victory at Cambridge. And that's 2 4-0s on the bounce now. So it's not getting much easier for Wade Elliott, and he was probably kind of really looking forward to obviously the semi-final and the Papa John's, and to go out in that fashion and to have lost the subsequent game so heavily. Yeah, real difficult time for them.
As for Portsmouth, by the way, you can have Mother's Day lunch at Fratton Park if you so desire. I'm not sure if you two have had a look at this. I did put the menu into the running order. Fine with the main course: roast sirloin of beef, roast potatoes, carrots, parsnip, Yorkshire pudding with a red wine jus, fairly classic stuff, albeit it comes with cauliflower cheese, which is a bit of a bugbear of mine for a roast dinner. Vegetarians could have a Moroccan spice butternut squash with spinach and feta pithiva, served with roasted new potatoes, carrots and spring greens. I think it falls apart a bit, Clarkey, with the starters and desserts. To start, bread and oils, olives and stuffed peppers. A bit of a hodgepodge. Bread and oil shouldn't be listed as a starter. For dessert, white chocolate and peach cheesecake. Crikey, 1984.
Yes, all this misses is a bit of duck à l'orange, isn't there? You know, so take it proper 80s. But yeah, no, not for me. Yeah, bread and oils is your pre-starter, isn't it? Come on. You can't kid a kidder. Not the best.
Once went to a steakhouse, an Argentinian steakhouse in Clapham, Sam, and we got the bill and they charged us for the complimentary bread at the start. Can you imagine my reaction? Shameful stuff. At least Pompey being upfront about it.
Well, I've talked up my Greek holidays on this podcast before, but the island that we favour, it's a bit of a thing there. It's a bit of a thing that they do you for the bread. So you have to go in there and be savvy and actually say, we're okay for bread today to save yourself the €4. Otherwise, it's on there. It's on the bill.
Well, if you
we learned the hard way.
If you're going to Fratton Park for Mother's Day, you will be getting bread and oils, but it does. It is included in your 35p per person supplement. Not supplement, it's just the price, isn't it? I'm going to move on quickly from this. We spent far too long talking about it. Let's get into League Two, where there was a big win for Carlisle away at beleaguered Crawley, whose stock is falling faster than the price of Bitcoin. 5-2 to the Cumbrians here. What was worse, Adrian, Crawley's performance or the state of the pitch?
Oh, the pitch was shocking, wasn't it? Yeah, not great, but Crawley were equally poor. Yeah, this was a heavy defeat. It's not ideal, is it, for a new manager to suffer such a spanking, but they don't know whether they're coming or going, do they, the Crawley players? It's been such a mess of a campaign. I mean, in terms of the Bitcoin, I mean, I'm the opposite of an expert in terms of the way that the finances are run at Crawley, but you know, if they do continue to nosedive, that can't be good news for the financial security and health of that football club, can it? So slightly concerning. Yeah, Carlisle back in business, really. They'd had a little bit of a blip, scored once in their previous four games. But yeah, smash 5 past Crawley. 3 defenders scored. Owen Moxon, former scouting report star, got himself a nice goal and an assist as well. And they had 20 shots in the game, Carlisle, 9 of which were on target. I think if you go away from home and get to 20 shots and have 9 on target, you can enjoy a couple of beers on the way back, because that's a very decent effort. And it's interesting what Paul Simpson's doing. He's just been there a year, big turnaround under Paul Simpson. He's done a stellar job, you have to say. And what I think is really sensible of him in a way is that he's looking out for the team rather than individuals. Christian Dennis has scored 17 goals this season. He's on the bench at the moment. It's Joe Garner and Amari Patrick. I know an awful lot of managers that would, if they had a player with that goal record, would just pick them week in, week out, no matter what. But he's obviously seen something about the other two that he believes at the moment works better for the team. And if they pick up more results like this, then Dennis won't get a start anytime soon. So, yeah, you've got to say Paul Simpson's playing an absolute blinder at Carlisle United. A lot of good feeling behind him in the city or town. I think it's the city. And yeah, it looks like they've got a great chance of going up.
Has he got a cathedral?
Do you know what? I don't know. Is it a town? Is it a city? I don't know.
It is a cathedral city and civil parish.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's only 8 miles from the Scottish border. And speaking of things that are close, Sam, I'm just looking at the league two table because it sort of caught me by surprise that Carlisle were up in the automatics. But I mean, it's anybody's, isn't it, really? You've got Orient, we can say they're over the hill and far away, 16 points clear of third place. But then Carlisle on 58 points a second. You go down to Sutton in ninth, who are on 50. I mean, you throw a blanket over that pack of clubs, don't you? And we've talked up Stockport, but there's loads of teams in with the chance of going up in the top three.
The top three, yeah, absolutely. And no real team that's had that consistency. Stockport, until obviously the weekend where they lost at Barrow, would have been the one that you would have anticipated putting pressure on the third place team. Carlisle have obviously leapfrogged Stevenage now. Northampton somehow remain there, although we don't seem to talk about them much. Mm. Maybe we should do, because they had a good win at the weekend. But I would say all the way, in terms of the playoffs, probably all the way down to 12th. And Doncaster, certainly Swindon, now they've won back-to-back games, will be looking up and hoping they can make 7th spot. But yeah, it's going to be incredibly exciting. I think the one sure thing is that Leighton Orient have got over there, whatever we want to call it.
Does that mean Joby wins the money in your little wager?
It looks like it. He's got a 14-point. He's got a 14-point cushion over my lot at the moment, Stevenage.
What was the stake?
Nothing, I don't think. I think we got cut off because the show came back on. So I think we shook hands without a stake.
Dominic Cork, the cricketer, still owes me £1,000 from about 8 years ago, where he bet me on TalkSport £1,000 that Spurs would win a trophy within 18 months, 8 years down the road. Still haven't won it.
Well, look, there's one team that we didn't mention in that pack of potential automatic promotion contenders from League Two. We'll speak about them in detail next. Our team of the week are none of the neutrals' favourite team, I don't think, really. Salford City, they've gone through the whole season without sacking a manager so far. They won 5-2 at Mansfield at the weekend to move above the Stags in the table. And Neil Wood has his feet firmly tucked under the table. Sam, are they amongst those? Well, they are amongst those contenders we just talked about because they're sixth in the table. But can they have designs on going up automatically this season? What do you like about them?
I think they take playoffs, definitely, having not made that jump yet. I've liked the manager throughout the season. I think he's been, I wouldn't say held back, but it's been an interesting campaign because he's had Matt Smith, which I think has proved important at times, but quite problematic. And what we saw at the weekend was a team that had a really fluid front three that could press from the front. And their mobility caused Mansfield so many problems. I mean, I don't think I've seen Nigel Clough be so nice about an opponent as he was at the weekend. He just basically said, they're two wide guys. Luke Bolton on the right-hand side and Barry on the left just absolutely tore them apart and didn't realise quite how good they were. And I think when you're playing a three at the back, if you've got that scintillating pace and directness in your ranks, you can exploit the opponent, and that's what they did to Mansfield. Anyway, it meant that Matt Smith was left out, and maybe this could just be the start of a period. Matt Smith's going to have to be content with being the plan B, which he's so often been during his career. This season, he did get reintegrated into the side and did well initially, but he's going to probably find himself on the sidelines here. But no, this is a really good team with a good coach, I would say, in Neil Wood, and I felt they deserved this accolade because of where they were in the league going into this game, just a place behind Mansfield. Mansfield had won their previous two home games really comfortably against Gillingham and Doncaster, two decent outfits. Salford hadn't won away in their last five, just 1 point on the road in that time. So I thought it was a surprising result, but I thought it was a convincing result where they possibly could have scored more goals and an excellent win against a good Mansfield side. Surprised that Elliot Watt now has the most assists in the division. 3, a hat-trick of assists in this game. No goals, which I thought was interesting. So this guy is an assist marvel. 13 for the campaign.
Yeah, the first win away from home of 2023 for Salford, and that is enough to make them our team of the week. From team of the week to tweet of the week, and it's Russian Hepburn Murphy of Swindon Town who gets the honours this week. See what you think about this one, Sam. He says, W! Exclamation mark. 2GS! Exclamation mark. MOTM! Exclamation mark. Back to back, all one word. W's for the boys. White circle, red circle. Picture of him wheeling away in celebration. I'm not sure here if the abbreviations are to save him time or because it's a stylistic thing, but I'm not that keen on it.
I quite like the... It's not font, is it? But I quite like the style because it's consistent. But I have got a few issues with it. 2G's for me is money, you know, the way I'm reading it.
That's just two football emojis, and we know what you mean by that.
That's $2,000. I've never been a fan of for the boys, never been a fan of that as a terminology, because I'm sure he probably thinks a couple of them are Wallies. So, I like the red and white circles. Obviously, I'm a fan of that emoji when I'm doing Swindon Town stuff, but. Yeah, it's not great stuff, is it? But he is a good player. And I felt what Dean Ashton said on Saturday was good, actually, and probably the truth. Jody Morris put him straight back into the team after he'd cost them at Newport, obviously, and got sent off and put him straight back in, and he scored 2 goals. So he's a good player. He's a good player. He was at Aston Villa as a kid. I think he's been over in Greece and had a terrible time of injury. So, yeah, he's going to be an important player for Swindon if they're going to make it into those playoffs. But he needs to improve his social media, no question.
Clarkey, you like an exclamation mark? Is that enough to get this a pass from you?
I do like an exclamation mark. That is a good observation on your part. And we got three in quick succession. It's like a theme, isn't it? My issue is...
We don't like MOMs, do we? We don't like giving yourself a tick for that.
Not really. It's a little bit bigger. But it's the 2 G's, isn't it? I mean, no one calls a goal a G, do they? I don't really...
Maybe
don't
he's
really
on a grand a goal bonus or something.
I was thinking that's an astonishingly large bonio there on that Swindon. I'm sure it was about 150 in my day.
Yeah, and obviously the punctuation's poor, isn't it, for W's, for the boys. But yeah, look, he's excited. He's got sent off. Tail between legs. He's got his chance. He's delivered. I think we can forgive him for getting a little bit overexcited here and using probably, I don't know, 100 fewer characters than he could have done.
The best thing about it completely is that Brian Gunn is the first person who has responded with clapping hands emojis, 3 of them as well. The Brian Gunn.
Brian James.
The Norwich stopper.
Crikey. Yeah, I was just looking through the replies and I didn't... I was just looking at the one from Clive Potato who said, well done, Russian. You and Austin remind me of the glory days of me and Penrice. Don't know. Mean something to someone probably. I thought he was going to say the glory days of Sam Parkin, but how quickly...
If it's Gary Penrice, then I take issue at that because I watched him at QPR toil for 3 years.
Great tash, though.
Yeah, he did have a good tash. Don't get enough of them in the game these days. Clarkey, tell everybody how they can follow us on social media and why they should do so.
Yeah, get involved at What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok, so you can see us. See us in all our glory. On Twitter, it's at EFL Watcher, slightly back to front. But yeah, look, we're trying to put out more and more interesting content on the social media. And look, we'll look to expand and develop it in the weeks and months to come. But yeah, spread the word. If you like any of our content, please tell a mate.
Yeah, give us a 5-star rating, nice review, all that kind of stuff if you can. We will only be putting interesting content out, so don't expect to see that Portsmouth Mother's Day lunch chat up across your social media feeds anytime soon this week. Before we go, another reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. We shall be back with another show next week, looking back on all the big stories from the previous 7 days in the Football League. Join us for that if you can. Until then, have a great week. We'll catch up with you soon.